Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is a star when it comes to the Chicago stand-up scene, even though he's now in Hollywood. Lil Rel Howery is from the west side of Chicago. He had a wildly popular open mic night at Jokes and Notes every Wednesday, and he even recorded his Comedy Central special right here at the Vic on Sheffield. Lil Rel has seen huge success this year due to his role on the NBC show The Carmichael Show and the Comedy Central stand-up special Relevance, which was just put on Netflix this month. It's great to have Lil Rel in studio tonight as my guest on The Download. Lil Rel, nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
What up, man?
I'm a huge fan.
That was a great intro.
it's the least I could do for you.
Just smiling over here like, well, that is me.
I mean, you're a kid from the west side of Chicago. You know, what got you into stand-up comedy?
I love comedy. I was a huge comedy fan as a kid. I was one of those awkward kids that watched SNL at 10. You know what I mean? It's sketches I shouldn't have understood, but, you know, being a big Living Color fan and the Wayans family and Robert Townsend, you know, Partners in Crime, like all his specials at HBO. Like, I remember watching a show called Quick Wits. They used to come on at the SNL.
Right. Yeah, right.
It was on, ain't that
right.
Crazy?
It was in the NBC Tower right behind her. Yeah.
Wayne Brady was on that show.
Yeah, really?
I was supposed to have been asleep because we had church in the morning, so I was up watching random. I don't even know if anybody else ever saw Quick Wits.
I remember it.
It was on for a while.
Yeah.
It was one of the best improv shows. I never knew they shot that in Chicago until you just said that.
Yeah, they did. It was a lot of improvisers from Second City, things like that. So, yeah.
That show, and then Louis Anderson had a stand-up show that used to come on real late, too. And I guess NBC, I've always been an NBC head, but which I ended up seeing like all these comedians I look up to. I mean, like Louis C.K. was first. Like, it's kind of weird, man. Like, I've been a comedy student for a very long time, so it was inevitable that I did it.
What made you go into stand-up comedy instead of like improv or sketch comedy, what's known for here in Chicago?
Well, to me, first of all, the way my brain worked as a kid, I thought all of it was one thing anyway. I didn't know it was a category for it. I thought comedy was just comedy. So, you know, you had to know how to improv, you had to do sketch, you had to act, you had to write, you had to do all that. So I thought it was all one thing anyway. So I mean, stand-up, it was easier to start just because I remember the Sun-Times used to have the weekend paper on Friday, so they had a list of comedy clubs. So I was looking at that.
Like open mics and
yeah,
like
I was
that,
reading
right?
the list of clubs before I was old enough to go to them, so I knew where to go.
Well, I read a story about you at Crane High School at your senior year deciding to write some stuff and put it up in front of an audience. Talk about that experience for you, because that was really the first time that you got in front of your peers, your audience. Yeah,
it was great. I mean, it was Mr. Washington. Shout out to him, who, you know, was in charge of the theater department, and you know, he was working on the play. He was like, "Well, you want to do it?" And I was like, "Yeah." He said, "You could write your own scenes and jokes and lines and stuff." So, I remember the first line I wrote, and it hit. It was like, "Oh, that's what that feels like." You know what I mean? So it was. I guess one of those things you never forget. I was addicted after that. I knew that roar of laughter from a big crowd and just that feeling of it. It was like, okay, I always want to feel this for the rest of my life.
What was the stand-up scene like in the 90s? I mean, to think about, you know, early 2000s, what was it like? What were the clubs that were available for you to play at?
I mean, in the beginning, I was just doing an open mic. So, like, sometimes it's almost hard to count the first few years of whatever, because you're not doing it full-time. You're kind of playing with it. You know, I was doing it every few weeks when I had my day off at the little customer service center I worked at. But by the time I really started getting into it, you know, it was clubs like Riddle's Comedy Club that D-Ray used to do Sunday nights there. That place, and Damon Wayans. So Damon Wayans' spot is where I met D-Ray at. Damon used to do a club called Entis, which is, it ended up being a comedy bar later on. It changed. I don't even know what it is. I don't even know if it's still there. I think it's next to Al's Beef.
Yeah.
That's exactly. That's on Ontario. It used to be called Entis.
They've turned that over
so
ten
many
times.
Yeah,
but it might still be a comedy club, but every year it seems
it's
like
a new place.
Different. Yeah.
So Damon used to have a great spot there. I wasn't even really old enough to get in, so I got there really early when the janitor was setting up the chairs. So it looked like I worked there, so nobody carded me. So usually, you know, you help out, you good. Like, I'm the help, brother, you know. And so
just moving a chair a little bit to the left, like, a little bit to the right, right?
I remember him looking at me. I don't remember hiring nobody else. What? Put that over there. And I stayed there till the show started, wrote my name on the list, and that was actually the first time I actually caught it for real, like caught it. It was being mean. I guess I bummed, but it wasn't that bad, the material. But what was the problem was I ended up doing a joke that Damon did on Comic View. And that was the first lesson I learned, that you had to like reprogram your brain, right? You watch all these comedy shows and you forget that ain't your joke. You know what I mean?
Obviously out in Hollywood, that's a serious issue.
Well, they don't care. They steal all the time out there. But here, that don't happen.
It's more of an issue here than
Chicago
it is there.
Don't play that.
Really?
So I didn't know it. And I remember Damon pulling me to the side, a couple of comedians. Now, I had to reanalyze everything. Let me make sure I didn't watch a bunch of stuff and I wrote stuff down thinking it was my idea, but it wasn't. You know what I'm saying? And that's when DJ Dollar Bill, I was bombing, and that's when that Wyclef Jean song, Someone Please Count 911, was popular. And they started playing it while I was on stage. Oh, God.
What was he feeling after that? I mean, bombing on
I was
stage.
In shock. I was like, I remember just sitting in the crowd smiling like it had happened, like a maniac, but I wanted to cry.
Well, there's a Chicago aesthetic that'll say that, you know, it's not falling down, it's how you pick yourself up.
But this is
so
the crazy part. The night over with, and it was actually the first night me and my boy were supposed to go to our first strip club, me and my homie. So okay. He picked me up after he got off work. That's all true. And I'm waiting on him because, you know, I'm waiting outside. Everybody's gone. I'm out there by myself. It's snowing a little bit. And Damon is there. This is after he done roasted me. They didn't play. Someone, please come down. He's like, man, get in the car. Now, it was awkward for both of us to look like you just talked about me, how terrible I was. Now you got to motivate me. It felt like he was forced to go, look, hey, man, just keep trying. You know? I remember sitting there like, man, don't say nothing. You don't mean that. You know what I mean? But what it was, I went home, I listened to it because I recorded it, let my little brother listen to it. He was cracking up like, man, it sounded like that. Yo, he was like, he was about to cry, fam, you know. I took out my joke, my material book, and just rewrote everything. Came back the next week and killed. And it was all me just talking about being a nerd.
Was that the motivation? You got home, you said, I'm not gonna go out like that.
Well, yeah, and I saw the other comics. Everybody was so original and had their own voice. It was at that, when I first started in Chicago comedy, it was so strong. It was like crazy. You had to be really. I was sitting there like, this is going to be, I don't belong here. You know what I mean? Like what I got.
Who were we talking? Damon Williams, of course.
Damon Williams, Corey Holcomb, Dion Cole, B. Cole, Marcus Combs, Jeff B. And this is just all in the same night. Everybody went up. J.D., D. Ray Davis. It was, yeah. And it's funny. That was I remember ripping the next week and Corey Holcomb going on stage saying, yo, you know, he said on the mic, yo, he going to be straight. Shorty going to be all right, man. I'm like, you were here a week ago, brother.
That's great. Lil Rel in studio. Of course, he stars in the show, The Carmichael Show, which is on NBC, just wrapped up. And also, he's got his Comedy Central stand-up special, Relevance, which is now on Netflix. We'll take a quick break. More with Lil Rel here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio with me, Lil Rel, stand-up comedian. I guess you're past just being called a stand-up. I mean, now you're a star on NBC.
Yeah.
Your stand-up special is on Netflix just this month. But one of the things about the names we were talking about in Chicago, the people who at one point were telling you, get your stuff together, you know, and then turning around and supporting you and motivating you. You know, talk about what it means for you to be a Chicago comedian, to have a group ahead of you, a group behind you.
Yeah.
You know, what it means to be a Chicago comedian.
It means a lot. I mean, it's something about our voices here, man. Like, you look at Bernie Mac, right? And, like, now, and it's not like that, but because it sometimes makes me uncomfortable, but I get comparisons to him.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily because I sound like him or anything. It's just a strong opinion I have about certain things. It's just it's a presence we have on stage.
It's authentic, yeah. And it's a realness. You're talking about things, yeah, that are in your life, not sort of like, and dating's hard, you know, doing that kind of thing. So there is this connection. You think that's what people
I know that's
see
what it is
about Chicago?
It's and Bernie is a great example because I think he is the blueprint of what a Chicago comic is supposed to be, right? And then you had guys like Dion, I came up under, and D-Ray. Everybody had their own voice. You know, Dion had this, you know, original way of delivering everything. And it was funny. He always been a great writer, but probably didn't even know it yet until, you know, he got Conan. Like, oh, I am a dope writer. But he was a genius.
Dion Cole, yeah.
Dion Cole, like, gave me tags to stuff that I even did on Relevant. It was a tag to a bit about my glasses I ain't did. That was one of my first real bits about, you know, my getting my glasses stole or whatever. And I couldn't tell my mama. And Dion gave me the conversation between my mom. He's like, yo, you need to milk that, yo. Like, yo, she'd be like, where they at? You know, and it was like, all right.
Is that, I mean, you toured the country and you play, you know, stand-up in Hollywood. Is that normal for stand-ups to say, hey, let me help you with your joke. Let me try to edit with you.
They only do that if they like you. And because it happens to me all the time. And then I do it, too, to be honest with you. Like, if I'm really a fan of somebody and I got a tag, a good comic or a dope comic will give it to that comic. Now, a terrible comic will not tell you to tag, just take your joke and add their version of it to it.
Oh, man. Is it cutthroat like that? I mean, there's so many comics in LA.
It's very cutthroat. It's cutthroat because everybody got the same dream. You know what I'm saying? Which is why I don't get mad about it. We all got the same dream and want to be this and that. So at 10, you get kind of thirsty, man. And I can understand. I'm not that type of dude. And most of my comedic friends are not. You know what I'm saying? But I get it, though. So I'm not as mad. Sometimes I'm irritated. Like, sometimes that's why I hate going up in L.A. You know, I feel like as soon as I get off the stage in L.A., my jokes is up there again the next day.
Right.
Like, oh, come on, fam. I ain't even left the city.
What is, for you, I mean, talk about the, I guess, the reasoning or the moment where you said, you know, I'm going to leave Chicago. Because you were a Chicago star. You had the show at Jokes and Notes. You had a lot going on here. People knew who you are. I mean, everything about it. What moved you to say, you know what, I'm going to take this to Hollywood. I'm going to try to get myself on television and films.
You know, it was more of a spiritual thing for me. I was praying one day and, you know, felt God tell me to leave. You know, it's time for you to move. And I didn't even know what was next. I'm like, leave what? You know what I mean? And it was tough leaving Jokes and Notes. That was a regular, like, a lot of comics can't have a regular paycheck. Right. It was like having a corporate job. The crazy thing is, when I quit, I was a little nervous, you know what I'm saying? Then I got a call from Ricky Smiley to tour with him.
That's a good
literally
call to get, yeah.
Right after that, it was like, yo, what are you doing for the next few months? I'm like, nothing, you know. And I started touring with Ricky Smiley, and you know, that was fun. And working with Ricky made me a better comedian and more confident in myself. You know, he used to host all the shows we did on the tour with him, and sometimes I closed out the show or whatever, and he'll be pushing me like, I want you to destroy it. You know, you just don't get no headliner comedian
telling
you to be the best on his show, but that's what he was doing. He was pushing me to be the best on the show.
I heard an interview with Deion Cole where he was talking about when he was on Def Comedy and he kind of got bounced off it because he ran out of material. He's like, I wasn't prepared for what they were asking for. For you, do you find yourself in the same situation? Because I've read that you're very prolific when it comes to material. You're writing jokes all the time.
Yeah.
What's that process like to be able to put sets together?
Well, it's easier for me. Like, it's so funny that story with Deion. That's because he was new. It's kind of like with Chris Tucker, too. Like, you can't control you exploding, right? You did that 5-minute set you wrote for TV. You ain't know, oh, wait, they want me to do it? You know what I mean? That's all I had. So, which is a good thing about, for me, I was able to groom myself here, right? I was able to have time to play. Mm-hmm. I didn't rush anything. I stayed here as long as I can. Well, I had hours of material by the time I started moving around. You know what I'm saying? So my process is really me just, it's freestyling. So what I do, I do this now. I come to Chicago, maybe for a few weeks straight, and do Jokes and Notes like a million times and go up there with no set at all, and whatever happens,
yeah,
happens.
Interesting, yeah.
I just did a show here at a couple weeks ago here at this hall and did an hour and a half freestyle. I ain't know what I was going to do. But the audience is my audience, right? So if I know they came to see me, I can say whatever I want. And that this is the first time I ever stepped back. Like, I think I've been cocky about it because I was doing it easily, but I had time off this time. So to do it with that time, I'm going backstage. Like, how did I just pull?
No, because you
did
see,
I just rob these?
I mean, you've seen such. Right. You hear about those stories about, you know, if a Jerry Seinfeld or Chris Rock wants to get back on stage, you could see him in a New York comedy club, like trying out material. Mm-hmm. It's the same for you. The process of like working up new stuff is getting on a stage in Chicago where it's familiar and being able to do that.
Seinfeld and Chris, the difference with them is that they do know what they're gonna do. They know what
they're just trying it out.
I'm like, I don't know, because that's what makes it sound real, everything I'm saying. That's what made me love Bernie Mac. One thing I started seeing by watching Bernie Mac clips on YouTube was that those Kings of Comedy shows, he almost did a different set each time. And I'm like, how's you doing that? You know what I'm saying? That means he was just going. It's a confidence when you know your audience love you, right? You know your audience love you. Let's conversate. Let's get real. I'm going to be myself in front of y'all. You know what I'm saying? That's how I'm going to create this dope material.
Lil Rel, stand-up comedian, his special that was on Comedy Central is now on Netflix. He's also starring in the NBC show, The Carmichael Show. Let's take a quick break. We come back. We'll talk more about your career. Lil Rel in studio. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, Lil Rel Howery. A stand-up comedian who's on the NBC show, The Carmichael Show, which just wrapped up. Congratulations on the season.
Yeah, season 3, too. We got a pickup. We renewed, yeah.
It's a show that at first you're like, oh, okay, here's a situational comedy that's done with a couple of cameras. And you're like, oh, I've seen it. But it's actually getting great reviews. People really like The Carmichael Show.
People love the show, and I love being a part of something like that. You know, I mean, a lot of times you could take a job or two that you're like, doing this for the check. And you know, it's not prolific.
Right. It's network TV, right?
But this network, but it's good though. My little brother said this to me yesterday. I thought it was dope. He was like, man, I could watch your show anywhere, and I don't care who I'm around, we're going to have a conversation about the episode afterwards, even if I don't know them. That's what that show, that's what shows used
that's
to do.
That's what it brings you, yeah.
You couldn't watch All in the Family without talking about
right, right. Well, that's a mark afterwards. Of a good sitcom, right?
That's a mark of a great sitcom. That's what Norman Lear had, he made the blueprint. And it was weird that for a long time, people went away from that, which I don't know why. Like, why you got to go away from that?
Is it because maybe there's been so many misses over the years where they try to do it and it doesn't work and they're like, okay, we got to shake this up?
Well, they tried it. Well, this is where the misses come in. I think when they went away from the comedian starring in the show, right? Because we had a few, well, you know, when you look at Alder Family, that kind of that helped change the game because, like, oh, we don't need the comic. You know,
right. We're going to have actors, right?
Yeah. So when you stop letting the comedian create the voice of the show and what that is, it changed everything. And now that I think the comedian is getting it back, you know, Gerard, this is his thing. This is his family. This is his show. You know, so if you think about it, it's a lot of great shows happening, to me, in my opinion, that's led by the comic. You know what I'm saying? And we're about to create these new dope voices because of that. You look at Key and Peele, for instance, right? To see what they're doing now and what they're about to do with movie-wise, because now they're about to go to another level, is because they trust that Jordan Peele writes all that stuff. That dude is a... He wrote a horror film on me. I'm in a horror film that this dude wrote, which is crazy. But that's now we can do whatever. We comics are really creative, man.
Is it hard for you to make the transition to be that situational actor where you're coming in through the door and you say your line and everybody laughs and then you say another line and everybody laughs? Is that difficult for a stand-up comedian?
Nah. If you think about it, first of all, it's a live studio audience. So we know how to perform in front of an audience. That timing. We have that timing thing down. And I've always wanted to be on a sitcom, so... It wasn't awkward. I think, you know, it was me adjusting to blocking and everything like that. You know who was a big help for that was Said the Entertainer, man. Like, before we started doing the Carmichael Show and I came to L.A., I had just called him just to check in on him. And he was like, yo, come to the Soul Man set. And he had me come to the Soul Man set just so I could see what a rehearsal looks like for a sitcom.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
And it helped me by the time we started doing it. I felt comfortable because I watched it. I didn't know any of that stuff till he brought me on stage.
And that's part of it, too. The intimidation is not you killing on stage. Yeah. It's about what you're supposed to do as an actor behind the scene, how you're supposed to act on a set.
Said was real specific about even the way he was telling me to, like, when you get the laugh, to wait. Wait a second, then you go. It's a way to deliver while the laugh is dying down. I'm like, but he had to tell me nothing, but he did. He told me all this stuff, and it helped.
You mentioned Dion Cole and Damon Williams. You mentioned Said the Entertainer. Kevin Hart, the relationship with Kevin Hart. But it does seem like Hollywood's about relationships, and you have developed these relationships because of your personality. Talk about what that means for you as a young stand-up comedian in Hollywood.
It means a lot. I mean, I've done a good job with not being annoying.
That's number one rule.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a cool guy. You know what I mean? Like, I ain't gonna be extra. I ain't gonna be trying material. I mean, if we at an after party, bro, I'm getting girls. Yeah, that's right. What it is. You know what I'm saying? I'm not gonna be like, hey, Seth, so I wrote this joke. And then Frank gonna say, like, you know,
Seth, give me a spot.
That drives me crazy. Right. If I see a comic hanging out with me and he doing that, first I check it, like, fam, if you're gonna be trying your material at this bar, bro, go home.
Is that
go
a
somewhere
thing? Do people do that?
That's all the time. Because especially in LA, it's kind of tough because everybody's always. Because you're on a sitcom now, so not everybody's extra. It's like you dating these girls who give you monologues. You're like, they're not even looking at you. Like, and then my dad. I'm like, oh, all right, man. Check.
Problems you didn't think you'd have, huh?
I didn't think I had that problem. But that's why I have relationships with, like they said, Bill Bellamy, you know, Kev, Dion, D-Ray. Like, I have so many great relationships with comedians. And even with, like when I did the Living Color reboot, me and Keenan had a great relationship. And I'm cool with a lot. It surprises people that I know everybody. You know what I mean? Like we'll go to these parties, like, well, you know everybody because I'm cool. I be chilling. Like when I go to these little things, I just remind them my business and then hopefully spark a conversation.
The In Living Color reboot, which didn't really take off.
Yeah.
But for you as a kid who watched that program, who, you know, we talked at the beginning of this conversation about watching SNL, even Quick Wits, to be a part of a reboot, to work with Keenan, to understand the idea of a new In Living Color. What was that like?
It was surreal, man. It was one of those things. Every once in a while, I speak up things I want, right? So when I heard it was coming back, I was like, I gotta. I remember DM and Damon Jr. like, who can I send my tape to? I don't know, my uncle. And how it happened was crazy. I remember, like, comics weren't giving me information. And,
yeah, right.
You know, and it happened in a weird way. It happened where they was looking on, they was on YouTube.
It was just competitive? Like, they didn't want to tell you about it?
They didn't want nobody, because everybody wanted that.
Everybody wanted
every
it.
Comic in the country was trying to get on that show. Everybody. That's the only show I've ever seen. Everybody. Black, white, Asian, everybody was trying to get on that show.
Let me ask, why didn't it work? I mean, it seems like it's a no-brainer.
We shot it, and it was funny. It's whatever that Fox and Wayne's relationship is never, the opening sketch for the reboot is Keenan sitting there and the Fox executive is telling him that he'll never be on the network again.
So you wonder why it didn't.
That's what he opened the show with.
Yeah, I guess we now know the answer, right?
I almost feel like he did it just to throw it in their face.
All right, so let's talk. I'm interested, you know, obviously you've got a lot of projects and you've got some stuff coming up and you've had a ton of success. For stand-up comedy, and you continue to stay on stage, you said before that stand-up's your ministry, that in a way stand-up is therapy. What does that mean?
Because comics always compare us to preachers sometimes. You know, the way we deliver things, the way we get the crowd going. My uncle's a pastor, so I hung out with nothing but pastors, right? And I call it our ministry because it makes people feel something, right? That's why people go to church. They go to church because you want to feel something. You want to feel motivated. You want to feel good. You want to feel like life is going to be better. You want to feel like that. So with comedy does that. When people come to a comedy show, they don't come to feel bad. They come to feel better, right? Mm-hmm. And most of the time, if you're a dope comic, which is one of the reasons why I love doing What They Do Wednesdays, it was a line every week to get in there because people felt like they had to have their midweek Wednesday.
It was like cathartic for them.
It was an open mic. I made an open mic look like a regular show. They used to freak open micers out that came from up north. Like, wait a minute, it's a real show. It's really people in here. The Chicago Bears are the Bulls.
These aren't just my friends. Right.
They popping bottles of Moet. Like, yeah, man, that's what it is, fam. Look at all these fine women. Oh man, I want to try new stuff out. You know, sweating.
Do you miss that experience now being in Hollywood?
I do. I miss hosting a dope night and pushing it, because it was a lot I put into that. You know what I'm saying? I used to go to the clubs. When I first started, I had a guest list, so it'd be number women on that guest list. Because if you know, that's who love to laugh, right? And then if you get a bunch of fine women at your shows, every dude is gonna come and they're gonna come stunting. You know,
out there, anyone who wants to start a new open mic, that was the formula, right? Or a party in Chicago.
If you want
to
make money,
that's the formula.
I was trying to make that bread, man. That was a perfect time, and we had the perfect after party afterwards. And it was just, you know, it was, yeah.
Well, the last question, and you have a long way to go in your career, and you're continuing to go up, and congratulations on all your success.
Thanks.
Thinking back to the kid who was at Crane High School, now being on Carmichael's show, doing a stand-up show at the Vic that gets to be seen by the entire country, now on Netflix. What does that mean to you? What does that make you feel when you think back to being a kid on the west side of Chicago?
Because when I think about 17-year-old me, and it's, you know, you think about friends you lost over time and who probably, you know, it's going to get all emotional, but it's surreal, you know what I'm saying? Like, I saw it, and I didn't know if it was real, but, you know, I'm experiencing it, and it's dope. You know, everybody don't get a chance to live their dream, especially from here, and, you know, all the crazy stuff that happens. That's why I tell young people, man, don't let your environment don't mean that's what you got to be, you know what I'm saying? And I'm literally thinking about probably why I'm all teary-eyed, is just a 17-year-old kid who just wanted to live his dream that he sat in front of the TV and he watched NBC and he's like, that, is that realistic? God, can I do that?
Right.
You know, so that's why when I think about the Vic and how that was, and then I think about the love I get and just to be on a sitcom and to do all this stuff, it's surreal. It really is. Even just, you know, just today going around and, you know, talking to different people, whatever. I was hoping I got emotion in my own time, but It's just surreal, man. It really is. I worked really hard because I believed in myself, and I'm, you know, hopefully I motivate some young kid who not sure if they're picking the right choice or thing, and they like, yo, he did it, so I can do it. You know what I'm saying? So it feels great, man.
All right. Lil Rel, a stand-up comedian. You can find his special Irrelevance on Netflix this month. Also, he's on The Carmichael Show, which just wrapped up. It's got another season coming up. Congratulations
another
on
season.
That. Lil Rel, thanks for being here, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, man.